serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country, with 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Next week, we'll be back to our World War II generation as we prepare for D-Day with a paratrooper who served with the famous Band of Brothers. But today, we're hearing about the brotherhood of today's all-volunteer military from a man who's doing everything he can to slow the rash of suicides in our veteran population. We've heard how Justin Bond somehow survived the Good Friday ambush in Iraq in 2004, alive today because of a direct blood transfusion from an insurgent prisoner. But the reality, Justin, is that the same battle that nearly claimed your life did claim the lives of other Americans, military and civilian lives. Of course they're on your mind this Memorial Day, but I imagine that's not the only day. How often do you think about them?
All the time. I mean, it could have been us easily. People that I knew over there at the time didn't make it back. You know, and now I put my life work into the guys that take their own life. And they say 22 a day, but that number's nowhere near realistic. It's only 21 states reporting in. And on the way home from Iraq, we had a guy, Nicholas, who had switched from Marines to Army and went over with us. He ended up committing suicide on the way home from combat.
So Memorial Day for you is about more than the guys who die in combat. The numbers of suicides for veterans are right in that mix for you.
It is. It's the biggest killer to our military. You know, we lost 6,000 and some on 20-some years of war, if you count both war fronts, if you add up all the years.
In Iraq and Afghanistan.
You know, we've lost 6,000 and some. We lose way more than that every year to suicide. We've lost over 140,000 to suicide.
That's unbelievable. Well, I want to hear about what you're doing to confront that and combat that. But I'm sure some people are interested in your quality of life with the injuries you have. I know you don't focus on the challenges. You don't focus on what you can't do. I clearly see that you focus on what you can do. But what are some of the challenges? What are some of the things that are more difficult because you're missing a leg?
You know, getting up out of bed in the morning is a little bit harder. That's one of the hardest parts, is getting up and going. You're like, okay. Getting in and out of the car and going into the store, it's a lot harder to do that. If you have your leg on, you can do it. But then every time you go from sitting to standing, you feel the skin pulling and starting to give way. And after you do that so many times in a day, now your skin is raw and you get the blisters and the skin breakdown. And in the summertime, every couple hours, you got to take off your liner and drain about 2 cups of sweat out. Pretty soon it's raw and you've got rashes, and then you can't wear your leg for a couple of days, so you go to crutches or a wheelchair. Social Security says, well, you're no longer disabled because you're walking in your leg good. I say, yeah, for 3 days out of the week, I'm doing great, you know? What about the rest? And a lot of organizations, a lot of people will say, man, you're not even disabled. I say, yeah, I'm not when I'm out here in the public's view, you know? But when you take that leg off and you're in the wheelchair and you have the phantom pains just start. Phantom pains are no joke. I'm going to tell you, I was in a lot of pain before. I'm still in a lot of pain. Because those phantom pains, it's like I don't know what a cattle prod feels like, but it's like electrocuting you all night long, and you just lay there getting electrocuted. My leg has been black and blue from punching it, trying to get the pain to go away.
The nerves just are on fire.
Yep. Just conflicting with each other and just on fire, so much that your leg is just twitching in pain, and you're just sweating from the heat. I know my buddy Dave Riley, who's the national commander of DAV right now, he's missing both arms, both legs. And he says his hands is like both of them are in a pot of boiling water at all times. And no pain meds can help that. Nothing touches it. So he's just sweating. It could be 60 degrees outside and he's sweating.
And these are probably some of the reasons. Now, when we talk about veteran suicides, a lot of them are people who physically look completely fine.
Yes,
but it's the mental and emotional scars that are prodding them and driving them and bringing them to that point of desperation. But I imagine that there are a lot of guys dealing with what you're talking about, that's what they see as a way out.
Yeah, I wouldn't know the ratio between physically injured and non-physically injured for suicide, but the majority of them are non-physically injured, but that's the majority of the guys coming back, which PTSD is a much worse injury than missing a leg. I'm blessed to only be in combat for 2.5 months and to come home missing a leg, because if I would have went from that firefight to every day after that, going back out looking for those guys that took the lives of those in front of us, I would have had to fight against kids again. I would have had to been on a vengeance to take those lives of those people that took our friends' lives. to do that 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 tours, to leave America with one purpose now, to go back over there to get revenge for your friends. I would have came back with the PTSD problems that the rest of them have, and I would much rather be missing this leg.
And you have a handle on that PTSD issue because of the work that you're doing through an organization called Our Heroes Dreams. Tell me what that is, why it exists, and what you're hoping to accomplish.
Our Heroes Dreams. After I had lost 11 friends to suicide, and I was sitting on the couch and pretty miserable and didn't get up, didn't take a shower for a week at a time, didn't care about living, didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live. I was kind of in that slump that most of them get into. But one day I went out and I helped a friend, and he was going to kill himself, and then he didn't. And I realized, okay, wow, you know, that was kind of meaningful. And then next thing you know, I was put into a situation where there was a suicidal vet, and I helped him. And then there was a civilian. Somehow I got put into that situation. I ended up talking him down. And then pretty soon it was like, okay, I can do this. And once I had a mission, and once I had a reason to live, you know, you carry that, the price of freedom on your shoulders. You have this huge mission defending America. And then all of a sudden you come home and they strip your uniform away because you're no longer good to the Army. You're wounded. You're no good. You go to the couch. Maybe the VA will take care of you. Maybe they won't. And good luck in life. And you're sitting there. Nobody teaches you how to be a veteran. They teach you how to be a warrior, but they don't teach you how to be a veteran. They don't teach you how to shut that light switch off, that combat light switch, the military light switch. And so you end up just checking out. Pretty soon you check out of society and then check out of life. And usually it's because you're getting what I call VA candy, the Oxycontin, the Norcos, the Vicodin, and then pretty soon you're washing it down with alcohol, and pretty soon you need more of it, and then pretty soon you can't get enough, so a lot of them go to harder drugs. I always say they didn't commit suicide yesterday. They probably wouldn't do it tomorrow, but today they took just the right cocktail of VA candy and alcohol that they could check out. They numbed themselves to the point that it was easy to pull the trigger, or it was easy to go off the cliff. Once I realized that I had a mission out there and that I could carry that mission and help again, it was easy to get up. And pretty soon I would go all day. I would come home and be like, wow, I didn't take my medication today. You know, I didn't take any pills. I would take it to go to sleep, and I'll be so tired that I could just go to sleep. And the next day I wake up a little earlier and find something to do. And then I realized that, okay, here it is. If you have a mission, you don't think about the pain. You don't think about anything. And so now that's what we promote to people is, yeah, you were a warrior. Yeah, you had something bad happen to you. I always tell the guys, I say, when you get to your funeral, I said, if you could be outside looking in, do you want your kids and your wife or your parents to say, man, my loved one, he was in the military. Look at all the wards on the wall. He did great. And then he came home and he sat on the couch and he died. Or do you want him to say, man, he did something in the military. There's some awards over there somewhere. But let me tell you why he's my hero. Let me tell you what he did when he came home to change my life and these people's lives. Let me tell you why he's my hero now. And when they hear that, they're like, wait a minute. Maybe I do have something to live for. And when they choose that path, pretty soon the pills taper off, the alcohol tapers off, and the system that we go by and what's working is traditional counseling. It's people trained for PTSD, which is a traumatic event. To me, a traumatic event is a plane crash, a firefight, a wreck, the Boston bombings. That's a traumatic event. What we have is like sending 18, 19, 20-year-old kids that can't buy a beer, but here's a weapon. You're going to go down in civilian terms. You're going to go down to Chicago or L.A. and take out all the bad guys. You're going to go in. You're going to carry your buddies off the battlefield. You're going to go door to door, and pretty soon you're going to turn that light switch off. You're going to come home, get to know your family a little bit. You've been gone a year. Turn that light switch back on. Do it again. 2, 3, 4 years. How many times did you wonder if you were going to die? How many people do you know that died? How many times did you return home knowing your wife and your kids less and less and less each deployment? All the way down to where you finally come home wounded physically or mentally or both. You go down, you sit behind a desk from a VA counselor, and they say, how did you feel when this happened to you? And you say, what do you mean when this happened to me? Which time? Which Purple Heart? Which time that I carried my battle buddy off the field? And see, they're trained for a traumatic event, but what we have now is a traumatic lifestyle. And because there's a disconnect there, these veterans are going through 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 counselors. The counselors, they don't understand, so they give you more medicine because they can't control you and they can't fix you. And you're chewing them up and spitting them out because they don't understand. So why do you even want to talk about your combat experience with somebody that's been trained by a book that's treating you for an event? And there's just a huge disconnect. So what we do is we use Vietnam and Korea and maybe World War II counselors. We use people that have been there, that do understand what it's like with the sleepless nights and the 40 years experience PTSD. And when they come up and they say, son, daughter, today sucks. Tomorrow's going to suck, probably worse. But let me tell you how to get to next year and 5 and 10 and 40 years from now. And let me tell you, show you how I made it through this. Now all of a sudden, they're not alone. Now all of a sudden, the person that they're talking to has been there. And they can say, oh, you have. You have been there. You do understand. I didn't think anybody understood what I went through. The sleepless nights, the night sweats. That bottle of pills sure doesn't understand. The next thing we do is we put on all the Band-Aids. This is, we do this at what we call a healing retreat. The next thing we do is put on all the Band-Aids from car repair, home repair, spiritual, PTSD, MST, whatever the case may be that's holding you into that bottle on the couch. We put on those, we help find out that, and we put on those Band-Aids. And the land we're trying to buy and where we've been doing it is at a zoo. And so every morning an elephant delivers your breakfast. You get to feed lions and tigers. You literally get to pet kangaroos and monkeys and play with zebras. And it's an amazing experience. And if we sent them home there, we'd be like a lot of nonprofits. It's a Band-Aid. You send them back to the couch. Then they get back to the couch and they're like, okay, that was great living again, but now what do? Now I'm sitting on the couch. You go back to the bottle. There's no follow-up. So what we do next is we help them find a new mission. We have so many veterans on the couch that have been helped, and they love going out and helping somebody else find their new mission. And that formula has worked 100% of the time. We've got them into a new mission.
Give us an example of that. What are some of these new missions that guys find?
So a lot of guys, I'll start with the homeless ones, okay? So we get a lot of homeless vets or whatever. We get them in there. We take them through, rebuild their relationships, cars, marriage counseling, homes, get them into new homes. Chase Bank's giving away 1,000 foreclosed homes in 5 years. Home Depot's giving away now 160 million in 5 years to fix up homes, all these things. And so we do that with these vets. And so over 20 homeless vets now we've taken. And in the end, we ask them, okay, what do you want to do? And they said, well, we know homeless vets. I know them. I relate. So we've taken, I think we're at 21 of them where we've gotten them jobs with homeless shelters. Now they, you know, the wife calls, hey, yeah, he's 8 o'clock. He shuts the alcohol off. He may have a drink or two. He's a family man again. He's got a company car. He goes out and brings in the homeless vets and saves their lives. And instead of him being on the couch, that's how it happens. Our very first healing retreat was a guy. He was that big, tall 50 gunner that was with me in Iraq. His wife had left, took the kids. He didn't leave his home in over 3 years. He had pizza boxes stacked up along the walls. He literally did not leave his home. We went over there, and I'm yelling at him through the door, knocking. He didn't want to answer. Finally, he did. I said, Ed. Well, when he opened the door, my wife was with me. When he opened the door, the smell of mold knocked us back. The house was filled with mold. You could see the mold on the walls. Long story short, we ended up getting him out. He came out because it was just going to be some of our unit there and his wife and their families. We had him out at the healing retreat for a week. Put on all the Band-Aids, fix up the car, $97,000 in repair in the home. And I asked him, what did you used to do? And he says, well, I used to backpack and hike and camp. I worked hard to do that. And now he's coming in with a new program called Mountain Warriors Under Our Program, where he takes veterans up into the Forest Service and maintains trails and works with the Forest Service to do all of this. And his wife has now been back home with him for a couple of years. And she's like, I wish you'd come home more than 3 days a week. You know, he's up maintaining trails and he's living again, and he's not on all the medications. And he's out teaching others about his problem with TBI because he has a metal plate in his head from the war. You know, and otherwise he would be there stuck on the couch.
Do you have a number of how many veterans you've helped through Our Hero's Dreams?
A little bit over 400.
And who pays for it? Where does the money come from? I mean, you're talking about some hefty impact here and some real life-altering investments that are made.
It's all boots on the ground fundraising. We've ridden a Segway from Monterey, California to Jacksonville, Florida. It took me 60 days to do. And we just rode a Zoom chair from Canada to Mexico, ending in Fresno. So we went 2,200 miles at 10 miles an hour for the 22 a day.
You're doing that to raise awareness. And when people hear about your story, they donate.
Yes,
along
sir.
The way.
Yeah, we have a thing, Operation 22. People donate $22 a month for a year, which is $264. Some of them pay the whole thing. Some of them pay $5 if they can a month. It's all set up online, and people go in and do that. And 100% of it goes into the program. We don't have any employees. We're all veterans that are wounded, that get a VA disability rating, or that volunteer. We do have 3 civilians on our board. The rest of it is the vets we've helped, and they go out and they maintain, and they're helping bring more vets in, and we're just growing.
And one of those cheering the growth of Our Hero's Dreams and the work you're doing is the guy who was your commander-in-chief, former President George W. Bush.
He's a great guy. He really is. You know, I don't even remember meeting him in the hospital the first time. But he has a story that he said, he looked over on my desk and he said, I told him that I had everything right there that mattered to me. I had a Purple Heart, a picture of my guys, and a cell phone. And he said, I told him, sir, my guys call from Iraq, and I picked up the picture. I said, when they call me, I'm going to have to ask you to excuse me, because when they call, I got to check in with them. And he said, when I picked up the picture, I just pushed the Purple Heart away because that didn't matter. And so that's one of his favorite stories. And then he requested us to come out to the White House. So they flew my fiance out. We were picked up in a 1960 Rolls Royce that said Mr. J. Bond on both sides of the door. And they took us to the White House. And unfortunately, he got whisked away by Secret Service and had to leave that day. But things followed through, and he did his first golf tournament 6-7 years ago, and I got a letter in the mail requesting that I attended. And I used to golf, and but I'm like, I want to figure out how to golf again, you know, go see the president. And so I did that, and then pretty soon I was on the Warrior board, his team 43. Since then, I've just been attending all of his events, and we've grown really a lot closer to where, yeah, you can call him a friend. He has an open invitation to come out to the ranch and go bike riding. You know, and he's such a great guy. You'll be out there, and so for lunch, he'll go make your sandwich. Might have 10, 20 vets there. He'll go help do that. And at holidays, all his employees that he has, him and his wife cook meal for them. Let them take a break. And he did that in the White House, too. A lot of people don't know that. I get a letter, and, you know, it said, hey, will you sign this waiver if you want to be in President Bush's book? He painted a portrait of you and wants your permission to put it in the book. And I'm like, let me think about that. I mean, that's a huge honor, you know.
Did you ask to see the portrait first?
I didn't. I had not seen the portrait until it came out in the book. It was the first time.
Uh-huh.
Part of me, it's still unreal. We're representing the brotherhood right there. Representing, I mean, I don't deserve to be in the book.
Why not?
There's a lot of guys that gave much, much more. Years and years of combat service that gave many more hours away from their families. Why aren't they in there? You know, I understand there's a limited amount. I barely went in and did my job for a little bit and got in the way of a bullet. That doesn't qualify me to put me in the book. What about the guys that did 10 tours, you know, and then came back wounded? They should be in the book. But I understand that, you know, because I had the relationship with him and he knew me, he's going to put me in there. And so I'm grateful and honored, and I will try and represent the brotherhood and the best that I can be down the road to be in that book.
Well, maybe he wants you in the book because he wants people to know about the mission you're on now. Is it kind of hard for you to believe that the kid who was homeless at 14, was crushed between a couple trucks, who rolled in a wheelchair to re-enlist after 9/11, who should have died in Fallujah and is saved by Iraqi blood, direct transfusion in a prison, is now buddies with a former president of the United States who painted his portrait for a book? I mean, who makes this stuff up, Justin?
Yeah, it's kind of unreal. The only thing I can think of is that God has a mission for us. And if you are a good, honest person and you have that relationship, you know, he's going to advance you as long as you're following your mission. And we may not always know the mission, and we may be on the wrong road 100,000 times. But when you're doing what's right and you're out there trying to help, I truly believe God's going to advance. And because, you know, there's a lot of people's lives being saved through the organization, and it's no longer me doing that. Now I'm just at the helm trying to guide people in the right direction, guide all these vets that we have helped. And it's going so fast that I don't see the magnitude of it usually until things like this when it's brought up. But when I see 30 vets that we've helped go out and help 30 more vets, you know, I just know that God's using me as a tool to advance that mission and to help, because he knows that there's not a lot of programs out there doing it. And so I just, every day I wake up and like, okay, where am I going today?
Memorial Day. You've had a few of them since 2004. What goes through your mind on Memorial Day?
You know, people always say, oh man, thank you, you're a hero. You know what? I'm not a hero. Why am I a hero? Because I got in the way of the bullet. The heroes are the guys that went over there and didn't come home. They returned home to the 21-gun salute. They're never going to see their kids again. I'm going to go kiss my kids goodnight tonight. I'm going to go crawl in bed next to my wife and be blessed tonight. How many of our spouses are here today? They're going to kiss a picture goodnight. So it's a very tough day.
And with every veteran suicide, there's another family that's forced to face Memorial Day in a whole new understanding. Justin Bond is on a mission to stop that epidemic. If you'd like to help him, or if you know a veteran you think could benefit from the work that he and these other wounded vets are doing, go to ourheroesdreams.org or call 1-844-OHD-VETS. That's 844-OHD-VETS. I also have that information linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, where the podcast version of today's episode features more from Justin about his long-term vision for helping his fellow veterans. Thanks for spending this hour with us today. I'm Paul Leffler, asking you to remember on Memorial Day and every day that freedom is not free.